past the hour, a little Clapton to bring us back halfway through the show. Go ahead, Ezzy.
Well, Richie, we have to give a shout-out to your boy.
Who's that?
Andrew Jensen.
Yes, he got engaged.
Yes, he did. We got to give him a shout-out.
Absolutely. His cousin, one of our producers, Colin Jensen.
Yeah, I believe his Andrew, his fiancée is Megan. So we want to give them a shout-out. Congratulations, guys, on your engagement. I was engaged once, but then I showed up at her house one day, and she was just gone and had left Winnipeg, and I've never seen her again. So I know what it's like to be young, to be in love, and I congratulate you guys. I know you guys are going to have a happy life together.
Well, you know, you can't really follow that up.
No, that's not... For real.
That's the voice of David Manuk of Illegal Curve you just heard. Before that, Ezra Ginsberg with those that emotional congratulations that he provided. Michael Remus in studio. I'm Richard Pollack filling in for Drew Mandel. Tim Debenham putting us on and off the air and throwing on some great Crossroads music. I guess as he was at a crossroads after his fiance walked out on him.
Yeah.
In any event, we're going to continue to talk about the World Junior Hockey Championships. A little notice here. Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram, if you've been watching the Ice Caps the past couple of weeks, we're going to ask him about each player, what's going on, what to expect in the future, what he's thought so far. He's coming up next segment, quarter to the top of the hour. And then at the top of the hour, going to focus on Evander Kane. The first segment, we're going to ask, what could the Jets get for him? We're going to go around the league. We've all done our homework. We're going to look around and see if there's matches.
Well, I'm looking over at Remus, and I don't think Remus knew that there was homework. I don't think Remus did his homework.
And he went to the casino last night. The next segment, we're going to ask the
Where's
fans.
Where's that bus sound?
We're going to ask the fans and the listeners. Would you trade Evander Kane? I want to hear from the fans. We haven't opened the phones in a while. Drew usually says, no phones. Yeah. But Drew's gone.
Well, Drew's anti-fun, so...
Yeah, Drew's anti-fun. So, but before that, let's talk about the World Juniors. We mentioned before the break, we're going to talk about the reffing. So let's put this open here. I mean, do we think the reffing has been completely abhorred since the beginning of the tournament, or is this just what to expect? Because remember, guys, we're now used to the Olympics being with NHL refs. Bill McCreary, guys like that calling the games. But if you remember correctly, 96 World Cup and all that other stuff, there was... some terrible reffing. I don't remember if those NHL refs in that entire tournament or somewhere in Europe. But in any event, over the years in Europe, world championships and such, the reffing has always been a sore point. What do you guys think of the reffing so far in this tournament?
I don't think the reffing has been great, but I think you still have to play within the rules. I mean, right. you know what? The reality is that you always have to adjust, right? It's evolve or die. And so you know if the reffing is going to be tighter, it's going to be called a certain way. I mean, the truth is... that's why you have these meaningless games against Germany and Slovakia to figure this stuff out.
Well, let me ask you on that point then. Let's go around the table. The hits, there's been three hits of issue. The Brody Jenner hit. Brody Jenner. Is that the guy from the
yeah, it's a reality TV. Yeah.
Holy smokes. Boone Jenner. That was good though, eh? You have the Kamara hit and the Lipon hit, right? So you have suspension for Jenner coming back soon. Did you guys think the Jenner hit was dirty, Michael?
I think when you're watching the replay and the camera isn't even focused on the hit and it's not even anywhere near the screen, there's some questions. It's questionable.
I thought it was a dirty hit. Ezzy?
It was definitely... there was definitely a few seconds between when the puck was released. I mean, whether that's a three-game suspension or not, I mean, it was definitely a charge, but...
I think it is.
You know, the Dave made a good point, though. I don't think the officiating... I'm not watching the... First off, you know, in the NHL, there are issues. But, you know, early on in this tournament, Richie, I haven't thought, oh, yeah, the officiating is really good. But the international game is a lot different. There's more penalties. They call more penalties. It's not like the game, the American game, like the Canadian Hockey League that you'll see in junior when there's more hitting. Anthony Kamara, a Boston Bruins prospect... he got 5 minutes in a game for that. Mm-hmm. Team Canada was down two forwards yesterday. It's pretty impressive that they won like they did. But better team. But I mean, that was a clean hit. It was a hard hit. But, I mean, sometimes you can knock a guy out with a clean hit. Ask Eric Lindros and Scott Stevens, right?
That's my issue with this. You know, the other two hits, I think, were both dirty. J.C. Lipon's hit was an elbow. Jenner's hit was late. Yeah. But let's be real here. Kamara's hit was clean. The guy, you have to remember that there's responsibility on both sides. We don't have Don Cherry here to tell us this, so I'll take the soapbox for a second. when you're playing in any hockey game with contact, the responsibility is on the hitter and the hitty. Okay, the hitter's going to hit you. He can't charge you. He can't get his elbows up. Kamara, lined up the defenseman yesterday, and I'm forgetting his name. Lined up the defenseman. Looked at him. He played off the defenseman. The defenseman had his head down. He deserved to get hit. Does he deserve to get injured? Of course not. Does he deserve to be, hurt to an extreme level?
The guy's name is Patrick Liza Ritchie.
Does he deserve that? Nobody deserves that. But was his head down on a play and he touched the puck? Yes, and yes. That was a clean hit. That needs to be in the game more than out of the game. And that's the part of it. You don't want to get hit like that? You know what the solution is? Keep your head up.
And there's a reason why Don Cherry has said that for as long as we've been watching hockey. It's because to avoid injury and to avoid a big hit. Body checking is a huge part of, we're not going to get into this now, but you might one day take fighting out of hockey. You're never going to take body checking out of hockey. And that was a clean body check. And that's why Kamara isn't going to be suspended. And by the way, we should mention, we were watching that game.
Is that confirmed, by the way, that he's not going to be suspended?
He's not suspended.
Yeah.
And by the way, it was reported in the Globe and Mail that they originally told Kamara on the play that there wouldn't be a penalty and it was clean. And then because the guy was, this Patrick Liza guy, was taken out on a stretcher, that they would give him a penalty. So that tells you something, that they changed their mind.
So let me ask you this then. Let's go the other way. So if I take a stick and I slash somebody in the head and he's not injured, if it was a penalty on the ice and then he's not injured, is it not a penalty anymore? Same thing?
Yeah, it should be. If it's a penalty is a penalty. Injury should only change a suspension, in my opinion.
Injury shouldn't change anything, in my opinion. If the play is dirty, and it's dirty, then you penalize the guy. If the play is clean and there's an injury from it, then there's an injury from it. That's the way, that's the break. Them's the breaks.
I think you're right. I think, that's just the reality of the situation, and you're going to have to deal with it. And so, when you see something like that happen, you never want to see an injury. Of course not. But sometimes it's the end result, and sometimes you have to be responsible for the way I'm talking about the player who's getting hit. You have to be responsible.
The inherent risks of playing hockey. I mean,
that's
they're
right.
there.
And exactly. And it's on both ends. It's not just the guy who's doing the hitting. Everybody knows. Everybody here has played at whatever level. But the point is that you still know how to play the game. And these guys, everybody's fully aware of what could happen.
I want to segue over to the Scheifele and Trouba discussion. I know Ezzy's kind of given us his take and the listeners his take on Mark Scheifele. Quickly, I want to ask Dave and Michael what you thought of Scheifele thus far, and then we'll switch over to Trouba. Dave?
Well, I gave my thoughts on Scheifele already. I think he's been excellent. I think he's, obviously, like you guys pointed out already, there are some things that he needs to improve. Mm-hmm. But the difference between him this year versus last year is significant. It shouldn't be understated. He's made, you can see that he wants to take that next step. Now, is he there with his lockout line teammates as he's... No, I agree with you, Richard. I don't think he is either. But the point is, he's still young. He's still developing. And you can see the growth. That's the important thing. I don't think... Is he at the NHL level with those other guys? No, I don't think so either. But what do I think that I see... I've seen a significant level of growth? No question.
You can still be a great player and not be at the level of those guys, because they're going to be superior players to most in the NHL. Michael.
What's amazing to me is how far Mark Scheifele has come from being a surprise, number 7 overall pick at last year's draft. You know, we were at the draft. When he got drafted, everyone was saying, who? It was when you're in a fantasy draft, you're trying to look through your sheets to see who's behind. But he's obviously been one of the top players for Canada. He's really impressed. And what impressed me was, I forget which goal, one of Canada's goals, his forecheck was menacing.
Yes, it was.
I don't think he got an assist on this play, but put so much pressure on the defense to make a mistake.
Nugent Hopkins' goal from Huberdeau, but he pressured behind the net.
That was a beauty goal, too, by Nugent Hopkins. But Scheifele's not only is his stick handling and his shot, but his forecheck has been very good.
My opinion on him is he's put on weight. He looks stronger, although he falls down a heck of a lot. I don't know why that is. I think that'll straighten itself out. He's improved his skating, I think, significantly. I don't think he's improved his first step. I don't know how much he'll improve his first step. I think that'll be a little bit of an issue at the NHL levels when he's trying to separate himself immediately from NHL skating. I think he'll have a little bit of trouble. Once he gets to full speed, I think he's really improved significantly. His wrist shot's good. He's got a really good wrist shot. He's got really good hockey sense. He does tend to hang on to the puck a little too long, as he and I were discussing that, but he does have great hockey sense. He sees the ice really well. I see him right now lining up as a solid number 2 center.
Yep.
I don't see number 1 levels from him.
Yep.
Because, you can say I always think about it in this way. You can say number 1 center, he can be number 1 center. But then you go through the NHL and you see who the number 1 centers are, and he's not in that level. I do see a solid number 2 center out of him, maybe with some room to grow in that respect. In terms of Jacob Trouba, I have to say that I've been very, very impressed with him. I've tried to watch the U.S., specifically Trouba. I'll give you my take quickly before I throw it over to you guys. The guy can skate. For a big guy, he's strong. He nails guys. He's strong. He can move the puck on the first pass. He's got two goals in this tournament. I don't think that's necessarily going to be his forte, but it's nice to see development at that level. He seems mature. He seems mean. I think they have a gem in this one. Michael?
Yeah, I think anytime you have a big guy who can skate on defense, that guy is going to be a force behind there and will definitely help you defensively. I think Trouba may even be ahead of Shapley on top of in terms of the impact that he can have on your team. I'm really excited about this guy and looking forward to what he brings to the table, you know, when he gets to the NHL level, which probably won't be in a few years because he's going
to
finish his collegiate career.
Yeah, Trouba had the only goal.
I would expect him to finish his collegiate career.
You don't think so?
No. I would be shocked if he wasn't in the NHL in 2 years max.
2 years.
A guy, you know, when I can compare someone to someone else, I do it, and it's tough. We were trying to think of who Mark Scheifele reminds us of. Jacob Trouba reminds me of a more physical Jay Bouwmeester, and I realize that Jay Bouwmeester, you know, is a very good defenseman, and he struggled with Calgary, but he's another guy that I don't think that Trouba has quite as fast as Bouwmeester, and I don't know if he'll necessarily, you know, develop into a 40 or 50 point defenseman. He might be more of a defensive defenseman, but you know, Jacob Trouba, I think they have a very good defenseman on their hands, and you know, this is his first season playing for the University of Michigan, and by all accounts, I haven't watched him play for the University of Michigan. I've only watched him play for Team USA. I mean, this guy, he doesn't do a lot poorly and seems to do a lot very good. Good shot, good defensive awareness. He can he can, you know, lay out a bone rattling hit when he needs to. And Richie, you might be right. If he keeps playing the way he is in University of Michigan, he might only end up playing there 2 years as opposed to maybe the 4 years that a lot of guys play in the U.S.
Scored the lone goal for the U.S. in a losing game against the Russians. He's everything the Jets want in a defenseman. He's going to be aggressive. He's strong. He's a good skater. He's got a great shot. And he's physical. So, I mean, there really don't seem to be many imperfections in his game, which is, I mean, it's still early on in development.
Who does he sound like? I mean, I think the description and is still somewhat like a Zach Bogosian, a great skater. Zach Bogosian's a great skater.
Yeah.
I've seen very few skaters in person who are as good as Zach Bogosian. He's physical, although I think he's meaner than Zach Bogosian.
Yeah.
I think they still lack a little bit of that offensive touch. But they bring a lot of the same qualities to the table. I want to see him a little bit more to see what the Hockey Sense level is. But overall, never hurts to have a talent like that.
Bogosian and Trouba. You know, if those guys are the anchor of the Winnipeg defense for the next 10 or 12
solid
years,
defense.
That's pretty good.
Yeah,
it's pretty good is right. Talked about the World Juniors. After the break, we're going to talk about the St. John's Ice Cap with columnist at the St. John's Telegram, Robin Short. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Five past the hour, Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg and David Manuk. Michael Remus has hopped to the other side of the glass.
Now, let's go live on the Legal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Joined on the line by Robin Short, sports editor at St. John's Telegram. Robin, thanks for joining us this Saturday afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing good. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well, Robin. We've had more of a chance this year than last year to have to watch the Ice Caps. Of course, they've been on national TV the past couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, watching them more closely and having read about them last year through your paper, of course, what's been the biggest difference between last year's, you know, successful team and this year's kind of struggling team?
Well, and it's certainly been a struggling team. They entered the Christmas break 11th. In the 15-team Eastern Conference, as opposed to this time last year when the Ice Caps were first in the East at the Christmas break. There's been, ultimately, the biggest two points, really. Number one, not to be overlooked, are the injuries. The Ice Caps have been just hit with a rash of injuries. At one point there, just before the break, there were as many as 10 guys out of the lineup for an assortment of injuries from broken fingers. Actually, three guys, strangely enough, out with broken fingers. Travis Ramsey, Julian Melchiori, the rookie defenseman, and Sean Weller, who was a call-up from ECHL. Weller, of course, last year played a little bit with St. John's 30 or so games. Each of those guys out with broken fingers and concussions. Jason King is out with a concussion. He's still out. Hunter Tremblay is still out with a concussion. So, I mean, injuries, they've just ravaged. With injuries. And secondly, those who are left in the lineup, as Craig Heisinger related in the paper today. You know, the fellows that are in the lineup right now are just not pulling their weight. They're just not playing up to snuff. So you put those two factors together, and this is what you're left with a team that's really struggling right now.
Robin, there's been lots of talk about how Zach Redmond has played, and you know, I really like the way he plays, and I think...
Oh, he's been a bright light this year. He has been the one bright light, absolutely.
Absolutely. How would you rate his play, and you know, how close do you think he is to making the NHL?
I think if the lockout ended tomorrow, Zach Redmond would be in the NHL. He is ready right now. I would think he's ready. What a difference in the Redmond this year and the Redmond last year. I mean, he played very well last year. Don't get me wrong. He played exceptionally well. Started to wear down a little bit in the second half of the season, which is what you see a lot from these college guys, you know, playing the abbreviated schedule and whatnot. In fact, he was a healthy scratch a couple of times during the second half of the season, but he rebounded and had a pretty good playoff. But this year, he's a little stronger. He's a little quicker. The big thing with Zach Redmond that you notice this year is that he's got a tremendous amount of confidence, and it really exudes when you see him on the ice. You know, he's trying different things. He's really rocketed up the Winnipeg Jets depth chart, and like I said, I think if the season started tomorrow, you'd see Zach Redmond in Winnipeg. He's been playing real well. On the flip side, Paul Postma last year, the Ice Caps MVP. You know, he's been playing pretty good this year. Don't get me wrong. But he's not quite the same Paul Postma as last year, and I don't know if that's if he's still a little bit hurt or what. He missed the first 8 games of the season with a leg injury. I don't know. I don't know if he's fully recovered from that. But it's clear that Postman's not quite the same person, same player he was last year. Don't know why. You know, he's not offering anything. He just feels that, you know, he's playing well, et cetera, et cetera. But doesn't look to be the same player. And I'm just wondering maybe there's some, you know, if the injury is lingering a little bit there.
Joined by Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram. Robin, you read my mind in terms of the next question. I mean, if you're a Jets fan, and we talk about it on this show a lot, you kind of look to slot in certain defensemen. And assuming Zach Bogosian's relatively close to returning to action, you have Dustin Byfuglien on that right side, and then you have Zach Bogosian on the right side. So you kind of have one right side defenseman spot open in theory. And if it was between Postman and Redmond, it seems to me that you think Redmond would have the advantage for sure.
I think so, yep. To be honest with you, I think so at this stage of the game right now. Redmond is the better player. And again, you know, Postma, he is playing well. Again, don't get me wrong. He's tied for fourth in scoring on the team. Mm-hmm. So he's producing. There's just something missing there. And I don't know if it's a confidence issue or if he's just not up to scratch right now. I really don't know, but he doesn't seem to be the same player. That's not to say he's not playing. Mm-hmm. He's playing poorly, because that's not the case. It's just that he's not the dominant defenseman he was last year.
Well, Robin, you just touched on something we want to talk about as well, which is producing. And one of the forwards who was looked at to be a big producer on this team was Ivan Telegin, who has 3 goals, 9 points total in 30 games. What's happened with his game this year?
You know what? Telegin has shown flat. I won't go so far as to say flashes of brilliance. That would be way over the top. But you know, he has shown flashes that he's going to be that he's going to be a pretty good pro hockey player. He's got great size. He's a great skater. He drives hard to the net. The thing with Telegin, he's a year out of junior, and sometimes that shows in his youthful enthusiasm, you might say. Sometimes he'll make plays that are not so smart, you know, throwing the puck up the middle, those types of things. I guess stuff that you chalk up as just being young and learning the game. But in terms of the raw abilities, his skating ability, his size, it's there. And I think Telegin is going to be a good player. I know that Winnipeg, they're not rushing him. They're taking it slowly. It's going to be you know how it is with some guys. Some guys, the young guys, they catch on very quickly, and other young guys go through a learning process. And I think that's what Telegin is going through right now, is the learning process.
Robin, Edward Pasquale played last night, but Mark Dekanich has also played quite a bit this year. Who do you think is going to emerge as the number one goaltender, or do you think Coach Keith McCambridge is going to continue to use both goalies?
Oh, he'll continue to use both goalies. There'll be one and 1A. If the Ice Cats make the playoffs, obviously, you know, I would suspect anyway he'll go with the hot hand. But Dekanich has played very, very well. Of course, as you guys know, he was an American League All Star 2 years ago. Last season was a wash. Mm-hmm. He actually Scott O'Neill brought him into Columbus to push Steve Mason for the starting job in Columbus. But then, of course, he came out with an ankle injury and pretty much wiped out his entire year. Dekanich tells me he had reconstructive surgery on the ankle, so this has been a rebound year for him, and things have worked out real good so far. There hasn't been any issues with the goaltending. And the truth be told, you know, I might even give Dekanich the upper hand on Pasquale so far this year. He's got better numbers. Mind you, Pasquale has shown, shades of Eddie Pasquale last year's playoffs. Of late, he's starting to find his form. So the goaltending has not been a problem for the IceCaps this year. It's a good thing, too, because it offsets the forwards who can't seem to score goals these days.
Joined by Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram.
Robin, that brings us to one other forward where those of us in Winnipeg are very interested in. What's the status of Alex Burmistrov?
Oh, boy, that's the big question. Nobody's saying anything. Nobody has, for the record, in the organization said what his problem is. I understand it's a shoulder thing. He's not with St. John's now this weekend as they close out this rather lengthy road trip. They're playing, the Ice Caps are playing in Syracuse tonight and Binghamton on Monday. I was kind of thinking that maybe Burmistrov would join the team for this, but no, he's not there. So, to be honest with you, I don't know. Nobody from the Jets are saying anything about this. I'm wondering, and I've got nobody has said anything either on the record or off. It's just my hunch. I'm just wondering if he's going to rejoin St. John's. I mean, we all know that he wanted to go to the Continental Hockey League at the start of the year, but basically Winnipeg told him that he's going to the American League. I'm just wondering if he's headed to the KHL. You know, again, nobody has told me anything. It's just a hunch. But I tell you what, Burmistrov has been somewhat of a disappointment in St. John's. I mean, he hasn't. Let's be honest, Alex Burmistrov, you know, one would expect would be a dominant player in the American Hockey League. And that has not been the case, not by a long shot. He played well, but he hasn't been dominant when he has been in the lineup, not at all.
And Robin, last question for you here before we let you go. NHL looking to hopefully settle this prolonged lockout with NHLPA. If the NHL does come to a settlement, who do you see leaving St. John's to come up with the big club, aside from maybe Redmond, as you mentioned?
Mahatchik, probably. You know, Mahatchik, he went through a lengthy scoring drought there earlier in the season, but his game is rounding in the form. He's playing very, very well. I guess you would have to look at Post, but despite the fact that, again, you know, he doesn't quite seem to be the same player he was last year, nonetheless, he is still playing some decent hockey. Mahatchik, for sure. One player that I would be very, very surprised to see in Winnipeg is Aaron Gagnon, who ironically enough, is supposed to be on a one-way contract this year. Gagnon, I mean, he's just been he doesn't have a goal this year. He's played in what 23 games. He doesn't have a single goal. He's struggling would not begin to even describe Gagnon's game so far this year. Don't know what's up with him. Ben Maxwell as well has only two goals. So
Patrice Cormier just scored his first of the year last night.
Yeah, well, Patrice Cormier was barely played. He only played three games, and then he had a knee problem, which required surgery. So he just came back just prior to Christmas.
Yeah.
So you can't really include him. But there's been a lot. Let's put it this way: there's been a lot of guys struggling, and if you're going to see anybody go up, it would be Redmond for certain. Mahatchik, you know, Meech has been playing very well. He's been a real bright light for the Ice Caps, Derek Meech. In fact, it's Meech, Redmond, and Postma who are among the top five scorers on the team. Three defensemen among your top five scorers. So that kind of gives one an indication of what the forwards are doing down here right now.
Great information on the St. John's Ice Caps from Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram. Robin, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon.
Hey, no trouble. Thanks a million, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Robin.
After the break, we're going to be talking about Evander Kane. He's caused much conversation in Winnipeg. The question is, A, what could you get for Evander Kane if Kevin Cheveldayoff tried to trade him? And B, we want to hear from you in the second and third segments of the final hour. Would you trade Evander Kane if you were Kevin Cheveldayoff? You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. 2 hours down, 1 hour to go here on the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, filling in for Drew Mandel and Richard Pollock. Joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of LegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus has taken over the operating duties behind the various computers I see across from me. Before we start the segment, the segment's brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Evander Kane, boys, has been
enigmatic.
Well, enigmatic's one word. He's been a central point for criticism, for discussion. Really been a polarizing figure, I think would probably be the most apt description of what's happened with Evander Kane. He came in here on the ice. People have some issues with, you know, some of his moves and lack of variations in terms of his play down the left wing and attempt, you know, trying to beat defensemen much. The guy scored 30 goals, 20 years old. But obviously there's been many a rumor about him. He hasn't really said, you know, put to bed any rumors of him wanting out of Winnipeg. Hasn't confirmed that he wants out of Winnipeg, but hasn't confirmed that he doesn't want out of Winnipeg. The question for us in this room we're going to ask today is, if Kevin Cheveldayoff, GM of the Winnipeg Jets, decided that he was going to trade Evander Kane, which he may or may not be considering, we don't know. Who or what or both could he get for Evander Kane?
I first think that 29 teams in the NHL would like Evander Kane. Now, do they have...
I disagree, but let's keep going.
Well, let's at the very least, you'd probably agree that a lot of teams would want Evander Kane, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, right off the bat, when I first was thinking about this, the first guy that popped into my mind was Phil Kessel, who Richie actually used as a comparison for his contract. Phil Kessel, obviously, of the Toronto Maple Leafs, was traded in 2009, late 2009, or is it 2010? I think it was 2009 for the draft picks. It was a 2010 first rounder, a 2011 first rounder, and a second rounder in one of the 2 years. That was turned into Dougie Hamilton and Tyler Seguin.
Yeah.
Right off the bat, when I think of if the Jets were to trade Evander Kane, who and what would they get? I'd have to think that two first round picks would have to, or at the very least, a first round pick and a player of pretty good quality would have to come back. Now, when I was looking at, you know, all of the teams, and Richie, I'd probably agree, not every team would jump at the chance, especially a team that's blessed with left wingers. You know, I was looking through a few teams, and I'll tell you one team, you know, that's not exactly stocked on left wing that I think might want Evander Kane, the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've got Chris Kunitz right now as their top left winger.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think anybody in this room is going to argue that Chris Kunitz is better than Evander Kane. Different types of players. But when you're talking about the Pittsburgh Penguins, they lost in the first round to the Philadelphia Flyers and were struggling to score goals, obviously. You know, there's when you factor in that the Jets will be moving to the Western Conference, you have to think that the Jets won't be trading him to one of the teams that are going to be in their own conference. So that right off the bat is going to eliminate some teams.
I don't think necessarily. I don't think that's a policy that any team should follow. I think you get the best return no matter what. If you're fine with dealing the player, then you trade the player for the best possible return. Forget who he's in your division.
Especially based on what you're wanting to achieve, right? Like, if you're looking to achieve long-term growth, then and for example, like, let's say the Edmonton Oilers are looking to win immediately, then you trade him to the Edmonton Oilers.
Right.
Because you have to realize, I mean, obviously it's not ideal. If you have a comparable deal with an Eastern Conference team, you're obviously going to send him to the East as opposed to the West. But if you're getting a lot more from a team in the West, well, you have to decide. Are you planning on winning anyways now?
And let's go through the teams. Let's go through the Northeast. You look at Toronto. I don't think Toronto makes a deal because of the Kessel deal. They don't make another deal of future for current.
Right. They're not going to give away those draft picks.
And they don't really have. Yeah. They're not trading a guy like Morgan Riley and somebody else. I mean, the Jets could certainly use a left defenseman to help complement Tobias Enstrom. I'm crossing Toronto off the list. Montreal could use the size. Mm-hmm. It's a bigger city for Evander Kane. Do they have some talent in the system? Sure. Is it top-end talent? Not necessarily.
Richie, you have to look at Evander Kane, we all agree, is a first-line left winger.
Yeah.
Or at least the real Max Pacioretty there.
But he could, I mean, you could argue he's going to...
I had Montreal actually down as my team is where I thought he could go. I thought, like, it's a good fit. They could use him. Like, first of all, they could use him, number one. And number two, it's a good city. Like, you know what I mean? Because, like, at the end of the day, ultimately, we have to understand that this player has to figure out what city do I want to be in? What kind of city do I want to be in?
Is Montreal big enough for his ego?
No, but, I mean, it's questionable. Like, you know, can you... play in a city like that. It's a very bubble city, though. I mean, they're going to watch you. They're going to pay attention to you.
That's right.
So, you know, do you want that kind of press? But, I mean, in terms of the team...
I don't think Montreal fits in terms of players.
Really?
I don't think they can give the Jets... I mean, unless you're training... You see, even a guy like Subban, who, you know, that was a popular rumor, probably made up popular rumor throughout the year, but you have Byfuglien and you have Bogosian. Now you have Trouba up the right side. You need another right side defenseman? You don't, really.
Yeah.
Especially to pay big money to. You need a left side defenseman. You can't play a right shooting guy on the left side, but it's rare in the NHL. Yeah. I don't have Montreal, but let's keep that in mind. Ottawa, a young up-and-coming team. I don't think a guy like that with some questions about his credibility, you know, into character and such, I don't think a team like Ottawa, young and upcoming, while he's would fit in the fast-paced team, I don't think a guy like him would fit in Ottawa, really. You look at Buffalo. Well, you know, Buffalo's kind of a mishmash of talent right now. I mean, you have guys like Palmerville. You have a guy like Tyler Ennis, who I love. But you do have a lack of size up front. You've lost Gostad. You know, you don't really have that many big guys. Vanek is big but doesn't play big. Now, Vanek's a left winger, though, so you're paying Kane big money to play second line left wing. Yeah. And I think that's a great point.
Or are you going to bump Vanek to the second line?
I don't think so. And then because he didn't pay big money. Then you look at Boston. Was Lucic going to be... And that's Boston's like team that's cohesive. Look what happened with Tim Thomas.
Lucic, also a former Vancouver Giant.
Right, but that's a good point, Nancy. But look what happened with Boston, with their chemistry, and with the issue of Thomas. I'm not saying that they're the same. They're the exact same. But the problems, if the problems are true here, and we don't know if they are or not, would a team like Boston want to ruin some chemistry? Look at the middle you got there. You're playing Sagan on the wing right now. There's rumors that they're trying to trade Krejci, but then they have Bergeron and Sagan up the middle. They have an embarrassment of riches on offense, especially up the middle, in the most desirable position in the league. They have Dougie Hamilton coming up in the back end. You know, I think if they make any trade, it's probably for a left-side defenseman to start and compliment guys like Andrew Ferentz and those guys, and McQuaid's and guys like that. You know, McQuaid's a right-side guy, but... The idea is, I don't think that necessarily is a fit either. I don't think there's that many fits. We move to the Atlantic Division. We look at Pittsburgh. You mentioned Pittsburgh, Yezzy. Again, Pittsburgh's got a lot of prospects on defense. They got Harrington. They got Pouliot.
Dupre.
Exactly. So, I mean, they're loaded in defensive prospects. That was kind of the idea behind the Stahl trade. They have two of the best centers, if not the best centers, in the National Hockey League.
Yep.
And at the rights, you know, and then they have a guy like James Neal. Do they look to add a forward of his capability? Maybe. But... Are they suddenly then going to trade the embarrassment of riches they have on defense, which they've worked hard for?
And they've weakened on defense as well.
Currently. I don't think they do. The Rangers, I mean, they're maxed out, really. Yeah. How many more guys can you add to that team? You have Gabrick, you have Nash. You're really not going to add him.
And Kreider,
Kreider. Now you look at the Islanders. Well, the Islanders going to, you know, are they going to trade a Strome? Are they going to trade a Niederreiter? Would the Jets even take a guy like Niederreiter? Probably not. I mean, Calvin DeHaan doesn't have the level of play that they'd want necessarily. Hamonic is a guy they're probably not going to trade. Again, another right-side guy, but he's a shutdown guy. He's great. Is that a match? Now, moving to Brooklyn, big city, big time. I mean...
He's definitely... playing a guy who played with John Tavares in the World Junior Tournament, he's an improvement, I would say, over... Grabner, who's right now plays with Matt Molson and Tavares on the top line.
Molson's gone.
But
Colorado is.
Oh, that's right. But Evander Kane right now, I mean, you're crossing off teams pretty quickly here, Richie, but obviously...
I think the Islanders could be a fit.
Well, a lot of the teams that you said weren't a fit, I would agree with, but...
What would you see them coming back with if he was sent to the Islanders?
See, I don't know. I just think, like, you know, needing upfront talent, right? Or who are you going to trade? I mean, you're not going to trade a Griffin Reinhart either, I don't think. But, I mean, that guy looked great on the back end of the Jets with this shutdown, stay-at-home, big-time defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
But are you going to trade? Who knows? I mean,
if they're serious about getting Evander Kane, though, they're going to be willing to
give up an asset.
To give up someone.
Yeah.
But really, when you think about it, though, you have to be a team that has the ability to give up a player. Pittsburgh does. The Islanders don't.
Right. That's a fair point.
But the Islanders, I mean, look, last year the Islanders scored 203 goals. They could use those. They need to score. I mean, they were well behind every other team in their division. I mean, that's a big problem, right?
What about the Devils? As you know, the Devils better than
anybody. Well, the Devils have got Ilya Kovalchuk and Eliash. I mean, the on the left wing, even though Eliash can play center, right? But he, the teams that I mean, another team we haven't talked about too is we're going through all the teams right now. But you know, switching over to the Western Conference, I was thinking of Evander Kane going back to his hometown in Vancouver. But again, you know, first off, do they have the ability to give the Jets anything on the way back?
Talking about the Devils right now.
No, the Canucks.
Let's talk about Devils here.
The Devils, as far as I'm concerned, wouldn't be a good fit. One of the teams because they've got Kovalchuk on the first line, and Eliash has still got a few years left there. But I mean, again, though, you know this, Richie, too. Lou Lamoriello wouldn't be afraid to give up, who knows, a first round pick, Adam Larson, to get Kane if he thinks he's worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, Lou Lamoriello is the type of guy that'll make a trade if he doesn't. I mean, the reality is, Richie, you know this too, and I agree with you. You've made some good points. Some of the teams that we've mentioned, yeah, you know what? They're not going to give up all these prospects to get Evander Kane when they've got certain other guys on their top lines. But then there's other GMs out there that say, you know what? I think Evander Kane's a 40-goal, 85-point guy. I'm willing to give up a prospect defenseman and a first-rounder if he's going to win us the Stanley Cup this year. Oh. I think Evander Kane is the type of player that you could acquire, and he could set your team over the top.
Look at Philly, and Philly, I think, is a team that actually could make some sense. And you got a lot of depth up the middle. You got Briere and Giroux and Couturier. Left wing isn't their strong point. After Hartnell, I'm not so sure you got there. Obviously, there's cap ramifications and things like that, but maybe you do trade one of those younger centers and say you get a big-time, mean goal scorer who can play in a big city. I think Philly is the team to kind of keep in mind. Southeast Division obviously is not going to go to Winnipeg. So, and this is obviously all hypothetical, but you look at a team like Washington, I mean, they've had a ton of chemistry issues. They're trying to do a new thing. I don't necessarily think, and I also don't think, well, I don't think they're going to stay in this division. I don't think Washington's a fit. Florida, a lot of young talent. Somebody to consider maybe if they're going to try and add a big player like that.
I would
that.
Agree with you on Florida. And Washington. Washington's not a fit because Ovi there. But, like, a team like Florida, they could afford to give up a first-round pick.
Exactly.
They have the best some of the best prospects in the league. An Eric Gudbranson and a first-round pick for Kane, maybe. I mean, this is all speculation,
right?
That's a team that I could see being a fit.
What we're doing is we're breaking down, you know, everybody says, trade Kane. Well, we're breaking down, if you're going to trade Kane, where is it going to go if that's going to be possible? You can't just say trade Kane and just say, okay, he's going to go somewhere. Well, where could he go and for what, Div?
The only thing I was going to jump on with the Florida situation is whether they get Luongo. I mean, if they get Luongo, it makes it look like Florida wants to win now, not later. So, I mean, that they'll most likely be a team that would be willing to say, okay, you know what, we're going to trade our future to win now.
Right,
because you don't get Luongo on your team to win in 10 years.
That's true. Carolina,
right?
A team that's added Stahl and Stahl has Skinner. I'm not sure that's a fit there. I'm not saying it's not. I mean, they have guys like Justin Falk and the guy who's big time young talent. Dustin Falk. They have McBain on the back end. Guys who they could trade again, right side guys. I don't know if they're necessarily a big fit.
I agree with that.
Tampa Bay is another team that, you know, getting a little bit longer in the tooth. Some of their key players. But, you know, what are you giving back? I mean, does the Lightning have the prospects and the players? I don't think that's a match at all in terms of rosters.
Yeah, Tampa Bay, I think right now you've got Ryan Malone on the left wing there. I mean, that would be a fit, but again, do they have enough?
Trade?
And again, you know, regardless if you think the Jets should trade Evander Kane or if they will, Chevy is not trading Evander Kane unless he's getting a good trade, good players and a good set of draft picks on the way back. So you're talking a 1A defenseman, a young 1A defenseman, more likely a 1A forward, Richie, a top six forward, and a first-round pick, or two first-round picks. So, but if we're talking players, and we're talking Tampa Bay, you'd have to think he's going to want somebody really good. So he's not going to trade him for somebody, a 20-goal guy. He's going to want somebody pretty good on the way back. And aside from maybe Victor Hedman, I don't know if Tampa Bay has that guy.
That's exactly what I was going to say. I'm going to quickly get one more division in here, the Central Division. You know, looking at a team with, do they have the talent? A team like Detroit, I don't think they mess with chemistry there.
No.
I don't think that fits at all. Chicago can kind of mix in talent, but, you know, you have a bunch of guys making pretty big money. Kane, and already won Kane. You have Hossa, and you have Taves. I mean, could he fit in there? Sure.
But with the cap ramifications.
Not only that, I mean, what's Chicago giving up? What's their young talent to trade? Or talent for talent to trade? And they're not trading Kane or Taves.
Right.
Right? You know, they're not trading. And you're not going to make the trade, although I love him. You're not going to take the trade for a guy like David Boland. I love his game. You know, Keith and Seabrook are not going. So
you have to, if you're thinking, if you're talking about like Chicago, just top of my mind, you're going to have to give up a first round pick plus a top six forward like a Patrick Sharp. Do they want to give up Patrick Sharp? He's an excellent hockey player. I don't see why they would want to change it. Pardon me, trade him to take on the salary. But again, Chevy's got familiarity with Chicago, but I'd have to think they wouldn't want to trade him and then play him all the time. But again, if they wanted him bad enough, they'd probably figure out a trade.
St. Louis, I mean, you have pieces there. But the question is, are they pieces to get it? Is a guy like Berglund going to be something that they'd be willing to trade and would do it? Jaden Schwartz. I mean, I see both Berglund and Schwartz being good players, but you're talking about Kane being a superstar, mm-hmm. in my opinion, in terms of his goal output. So they have some young prospects there that you could certainly think about, and even on their team, but... You know, Ty Ratty, you're seeing in the World Juniors yep. and things like that. But what are the peaks for those guys, and are the Jets willing to wait
yeah,
longer?
Yeah, you'd have to give up, again, you'd have to give up the Ratty, like you mentioned, or a Tarasenko, plus yep. a first round and maybe even a second round pick, depending on how high the Jets rank that prospect that would be coming to them. But again, I know, Richie, you want to take some calls here, but Evander Kane, I think it can't be overestimated, or I guess it would be underestimated, sorry, that if a player... If a team is acquiring Evander Kane, they're acquiring a bottom top 20 left winger in the NHL. I think you're talking about a guy that it's undeniable has 40 goal potential, maybe yeah. even 50 goal potential. He's 21 years old and an excellent hockey player. So you're talking about a guy that could bring a lot back. So if you're going to trade him, yep. you have the ability to get quite a bit back. And when you talk about the Boston Bruins, they did pretty well trading Phil Kessel, even though Toronto didn't think their draft picks were going to be that high. Tyler Seguin and Dougie Hamilton for Phil Kessel. That's not bad.
What about Nashville, quickly? I'm going to two more teams, and then we're taking calls next segment asking what you think, if you think that Kane should be traded, and of course you can opine whether or not, you know, what you think the return should be. Quickly going to go through Nashville. I think Nashville has showed a penchant for going after players
Kane.
With some questionable character issues, if Kane has those. And, yeah, and they have some defensive prospects and prospects. So I think Nashville is going to be on the list. So far I have the Islanders, yep. Philly, Florida, St. Louis, and Nashville. Columbus, I don't think... John Davidson goes in there and starts pulling in a guy like Evander Kane. I think it's a slow, methodical move there. Although I think they're going to be better than people think this year, I don't think Columbus is going to be trading. Not that they don't trade young talent, because you're getting young talent in that trade. I don't think Columbus would make that move. So let's leave it there. I want to go to break. We have the Northwest and Pacific Division to finish off. We'll start taking your calls next segment at 204-780-1290. We'll try and stretch into the next segment as well. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We got a call here, a guest caller on the line. I'm not sure if we're going to patch him through or not before we get to the other calls. Ezra Ginsberg in studio along with David Manuk. I'm Richard Pollack filling in for Drew Mandel, whose father is currently on the line. Do we have Sheldon on the line here? Can you hear me? Only three more segments to go, by the way. Sheldon, are you on the line?
How are you?
I'm good. I'm honored that you're listening without Drew in studio.
Well, I just actually he's asked me to evaluate how you were doing without him.
How's minus 2 out of 10?
No, you guys are doing well. You're missing that touch of professionalism, but that's about it. You know, your content is very good. I don't think they're trading Evander Kane.
No,
not yet. He's a little too young. I think they'll try to work with him. That's sort of the philosophy, I think, of the Winnipeg Jets. And for as little as I know about hockey, that's what I would think.
Sheldon, what about me? It's Ezzy here. If a Legal Curve were to trade me, what could they get for me in return?
Well, I'll tell you what. I would like to know the name of that girl who left town because she knew you were coming over.
her name was Candy.
Candy, all right. Well, they say candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker. But I don't think they would get anything for you because you're irreplaceable.
Oh, that's nice of you.
We got to leave.
Could we have that queued up for when Drew calls in later and we can play that?
Absolutely, you could do that.
We'll play that for a long time, Sheldon.
Okay, enjoy.
Thanks,
Sheldon.
Bye.
You know, we have two callers on hold. We're going to quickly get through these other divisions and hop to those callers.
Yep.
I believe we have Greg and Ken on the line. We're quickly going to go to the Northwest. You have Edmonton, Calgary, Minnesota. I mean,
okay, let's skip past Edmonton because they're stacked.
Yeah,
Edmonton isn't going to trade anybody. They're going for it. Calgary, interesting. Probably not, because you've got
nobody to trade.
Nobody to trade. Plus, you've got Iggy, Cammy on that top line.
We're not trading Barchi, though. I mean, that's the only guy they have to trade.
And Minnesota, you could probably skip over. They just got Parise.
Yeah.
So, I mean, again, the Jets are only going to trade him to a team that has the prospects to give and have a top six left wing role and most likely a top left wing role.
And this is for discussion purposes. This is sports radio. We're having a good time with this. We're trying to look at it in a more analytical way than maybe just glossing over the top. But Colorado's another team in the Northwest Division.
Right.
That may be a fit.
Yeah. I mean, you've got Gabriel Landeskog there. You've got you've got some young talent. I'm just saying, you know, as far as who they've got there, and Matt Duchene and Stastny.
I actually don't necessarily think Duchene's as untouchable as everybody else does, but you never know.
Yeah.
You never know. I'm going to leave Colorado on a list.
Colorado could probably be a fit.
Possible teams.
Yeah.
Possible teams. And then you have Vancouver.
Yeah,
which of course is a natural fit.
He's not gonna take over for Daniel Sedin on the top line, but he'd probably be an improvement over what they have on the left wing now on the second line.
What are they giving up?
They got nothing.
You'd have to give up again. You know, you're talking maybe an Edler and a first round draft pick. They're not going to do it.
Well, I mean, the Jets wouldn't do that.
Because of his
back problems, and I mean, a guy like Edler and a first round pick wouldn't be great.
I don't know
Edler
if they would do that. Actually,
Edler would be a fit. Actually, I think Edler would be a fit here for sure if his back problems aren't an issue. Left hand shooting defenseman, you could play him there on another top pairing. I mean, I'm going to leave him on the list just because they're home team, but they need to add another forward in that mix. The final one is we're looking at LA, you're looking at Anaheim. So LA, Anaheim.
Anaheim could be a fit because they might want to trade Bobby Ryan, who's their current top left winger. So
great point. But who else does Anaheim have to trade? You know, maybe some guy like Fowler. But Ryan and Carlisle didn't go along. Carlisle and Heisinger are good friends. I don't see that coming to fruition. I don't think Anaheim would necessarily be a fit, although they might have some cap space depending on what happens with Perry and Getzlaf. I'm going to cross them off for now, but you never know. San Jose, they have no real prospects. So are they trading? Like for a trade like this. So are they trading current guys, and who are their current guys? They're not trading.
Well, Patty Marleau's their top-line left winger.
Pavelski's the only guy you're thinking of, and are you going to trade a center for a left winger?
No.
Probably not. Defense, I mean, I don't think they're trading, and Jets really need a guy like Burns. Is LA mixing up their chemistry? No. They just won the Cup. Phoenix doesn't have any money, so cross them off the list. So you're left with Dallas.
Right now you've got Louis Erickson there as their left winger.
That's
I'd
great.
Probably say Vander Kane is... I don't know. Louis Erickson's pretty good. Dallas is a team that, you know, they went out and got Whitney and Yager. They're older. That would be a maybe.
Maybe. So
probably a fit.
Before we get to the call, we're going to go to Greg here quickly. We have one, Dallas, Colorado, Vancouver. That's three. Nashville and St. Louis. Florida, Philly, and the Islanders. We have about eight teams we think are reasonable destinations. Doesn't mean the other teams are discluded. Doesn't mean he's even going to get traded. But when you're talking about if there's going to be a trade, that's the point of this discussion. If you're talking about if there's going to be a trade, think about the possibilities before just tossing that out there. Are we going to go? We got Greg on the line here. Greg, how you doing?
Hey, how are you? Long time in here.
Yeah, it's been a while. We haven't taken calls in a while. Greg, what do you think about this discussion?
Well, first of all, let's do some housekeeping business. Ezzy?
Yes.
Don't be blocking coworkers. Seriously, treat them like they're family. Okay.
And Greg's referring to the fact that Ezra this morning blocked Drew on Twitter.
But Greg, I have to defend myself here. Drew blocked me after I was joking around, so I just blocked him out of spite.
Mm. Then I will say both of you need to, in the words of kiss and make up.
Oh.
Yeah. No, you're right, Greg. We're just joking each other. Drew and I spend so much time with each other, we tend to annoy each other. But we're really good friends. We've been good friends for a long time. So
yeah, I don't want to see that, because personally, that's a closeness group. There, I would say you basically deal with each other more than other people, including wives, girlfriends, fiancés of that nature.
That's right.
You treat each other with respect. I do not want to hear any hostility between. Between the four or five of you, or how many of you?
I like it.
You know what, Greg? I'm going to take your advice. I'm going to heed your advice.
Yeah, and he hasn't listened to anybody. Greg, what do you think? Before we get quickly, we're up against it, Greg. I want to get your take on this Evander Kane thing. What do you think of it?
Okay, this is how I'm looking at it. He is on a fine line in terms of being traded. I will say, first of all, you basically when we have a season operating up, we have two veteran players that we got from free agency in terms of Jokinen and Paul Karofsky, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Those two are going to be probably the veteran group in terms of controlling the locker room, including Evander Kane. And I'll toss in Andrew Ladd that he needs to grow a pair in terms of controlling Evander Kane and other people who are stepping out of line by flashing two Stanley Cup rings. If he gets traded, scratch off the Pittsburgh Penguins, because that is a locker room that has leaders on and off off the ice, such as Malkin, Crosby, and another James Neal, and other high-priced talent who are good people on and off the ice. And I think that they will not want the hassle in regards to that. And I basically hashtag it to you, Ezzy, and you, Remus, that it will be a personality check type of issue.
Do you think he gets quickly, Greg? Before we go to break, do you think he gets dealt?
Again, I will say he's on a fine line. Okay. I will say one more. I will say hiccup in that nature. I will say Gary Wallace's article will come to light that he might not finish his 6-year deal in Peg City.
Greg, thanks for the call. We're up against it. Half past, only half an hour to go. When we come back, we're going to do news and notes. Before that, we're going to talk to Ken and Dean. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. Less than half an hour left on the Legal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday, December 29th, the last show of 2012. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mindell, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of illegalcurve.com, and he always... great, handsome Michael Remus. Before we head on to our usual segment of news and notes, we got one more call on the line to talk about this Evander Kane issue. I believe you may know him as Jets XOXO. Dean, are you on the line?
Yeah, I am. How's it going, boys? Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Dean.
Happy New Year, my man.
Excellent. I'm just ironing my clothes for tonight, getting all ready.
As he's already got his stuff laid out and ready on the bed.
Excellent. I'm getting there, too. I'm catching up. But, we got to talk about this, and it's cut and dry, so I'll make it real quick, but, like, 30 goals, and we're so fortunate to have anybody put 30 goals in the net. So his own personal life, like, the kid is 20. We're not going to give away somebody who's on, like, an exceptionally short list of super talented hockey players because of Twitter, so...
Well, you know what? The guys like that, Dean, don't grow on trees. You're right. 30 goals. And the guy, and 30 goals, to be pointed out, 30 goals really on the second line with not much help and playing mostly second power play line and not playing 5-on-3. So you could argue he'll be at 40 goals in 2 years.
Easily. So I don't see how anyone has any problem with somebody of that stature being on our team. And especially, like, it's not like he's hitting women or Chris Brown over here. Like, give the guy a break. This is, like, posing after... Floyd Mayweather, so this is ridiculous.
No, and Dean, I tend to agree with you, and what's happened with Evander Kane is I think he's off the ice. He's gotten, you know, off to a bad start in Winnipeg with what happened, you know, earlier on in the year, and then, you know, with Twitter and all that. He's gotten off to a bad start, and I agree with you. He's too young and he's too talented to give up on or trade at this point.
But you can't. I mean, if you can get a great package for him and you think he's an issue in the locker room,
right,
I bet you they consider it. But the talent-wise, Dean, talent-wise, I don't think we have any disagreement.
Right on.
Just as talented, or more talented, and arguably the most talented player on the entire team.
I love it. It's the best. It's great to see him score goals. You know, we all sit there and watch it live. It's fantastic.
And it's hard to score goals at the NHL level. That's absolutely true. Let's continue this tonight, Dean. We'll see you later.
I can't wait to see you tonight, Dean.
Thanks, Dean.
All right.
The drinks will be cold.
NHL news and notes.
Boys, this week Eric DeHatrick wrote an article in the Globe and Mail.
Friend of a Legal Curve.
Wondering if a new round-robin format, or an old round-robin format as the case may be, would be better than the current World Junior Hockey Championship format, which sees teams play a round-robin and then go to the playoffs, one knockout format. The old format used to be that the tournament was a round-robin, the best record won the tournament.
Gold medal goes to the best record.
And now it's a playoff format. You play for seeding and then you play in a tournament. Are you in agreement with this possible suggestion?
If I remember correctly, it was the mid-90s when this changed.
That's right.
96 or 97? Maybe Reem can check that for us, or Richie, maybe you can check that while I'm giving my answer here. You know, I actually like the way the current format sits, and I'll tell you why. I like Canada's only lost a few games, by the way, in the last 10 years. I forget how many games they've lost, you know, over the last 10 years. It's very few. But Canada hasn't won the gold medal since 2009. They've lost to the U.S., Russia, and last year was Sweden, Canada, won the bronze. I like the format because you don't want to see a gold medal winner decided with 2-3 games left for each team. I like the fact that it comes down to the semifinals and the finals. I like that. The argument would be that you have too many meaningless games, and you have games where Canada plays Germany and Slovakia, and that's going to be a win. They're going to get to the semifinals anyways, and I agree with that.
Canada's argument, let me get in there. Argument was, we don't play together all the time, right. So we need some time to prepare and get through the game first. Change in 95, Remus says. So we need to get acclimated to each other in terms of teammates, and then when the games actually matter, everybody will have kind of been on a more even playing field, as opposed to the Russian Slovak teams who have played together for far longer. That was the idea behind it and rationale behind it. I personally like the playoff format. I think a playoff format, you lose, you win, you're in, you lose, you're out. In any event, it makes for entertaining games. Think about it this way, guys. I mean, Canada loses to one game, or everybody's 7-0. You know, for example, if you're Canada and the U.S. and Russia, you all play 6-1. You each beat, each beat each other. Somebody loses to somebody else, and you're going based on goal differential. That's how it's going to end. Trying to score a goal at the end of the game. Give me a real game.
Before Dave gets in here, I want to put it to you this way. At the 2011 World Junior Championships, remember Russia came back and scored 5 goals and beat Team Canada?
Yep.
Imagine if Canada had already been awarded the gold medal before that game played, That game meant nothing.
That's right.
I don't think anybody would want that game to mean nothing.
Kills ratings, because everybody watches the Canada games anyhow now. So, and that's really where the tournament's driving business. So if everybody already watches the games anyhow, what will it do to make every game equally as important? Well, people are going to watch it, but they're going to watch more. You're going to have people really watching. The casual fan will watch the final that actually matters, not the second game of the tournament, which may end up mattering 2 weeks later, but doesn't matter now.
Yeah, you can't put a price on a finals versus a meaningless second game, which turns out to have significant meaning because you won 10-0, and so you know what I mean. So I think it's ridiculous. I mean, I understand it, but I mean at the same time, you got to stick with the present format.
Lou Lamoriello, guys, this week came out in the New Jersey Star Ledger. Rich Scheer of the New Jersey Star Ledger wrote the article. And Lamoriello came out and voiced his opinion on the lockout and said he was embarrassed. What did you guys think of those comments?
I loved them. I thought it was great to hear from Lamoriello. I mean, he's a longtime NHL executive. He's been in the league for decades. So he's entitled to his opinion. Now, of course, the NHL has a moratorium on any comments. So the fact that he made a statement could have cost him, $1 million, as the NHL's held that over the league's head, over anybody within the league's head to, not comment on the situation. But Lamoriello's obviously frustrated. He's embarrassed, and he should be. And it's good to see that he's actually saying something. Now, does it weaken his position, the league's position? Not really. So I think it's good just to hear what he had to say.
Keep this in mind, too. Lamoriello was a big part in drafting the last CBA. And then him and Bevan kind of had a little bit of a falling out when he signed Kovalchuk within the rules.
He was fined.
And then, they fined him and not any of the other contracts before that. So keep that in mind. Ezzy?
Forget the fact that Bettman and some of the owners might not be happy. I don't really care. I was glad that he said that. It is embarrassing. It's embarrassing that there has been a lockout for the second time in 8 years. I'm happy that he said it.
Kevin McGran of the Toronto Star this week wrote an article about the importance of the World Junior Hockey Championship, saying the team like the Leafs have as many as 6 executive/scouts at the tournament. Some other teams have less. Some other teams have about the same. What I took from this article is, are there too many cooks in the Leafs' kitchen? Do they have too many people making decisions? They had Cliff Fletcher for a while, and they have Dave Nonis, and they have a bunch of other players and a bunch of other guys and scouts. And do they almost have too many people making these decisions that it may not necessarily be the best method to making picks and evaluations of talent?
Well, clearly there must be something to that, Richard, because they haven't been successful. So until whatever they're currently doing hasn't resulted in success. Now, we're seeing with some of their draft picks that they could have some future success upcoming. So maybe they've turned it around slightly. But it's very difficult to give the Leafs any sort of positive, positive response because they've been terrible.
Right. And I think, Dave, that's a good point. And I think Morgan Riley's a good draft pick. But the Toronto Maple Leafs, I think, this is a little bit off topic from scouting and, if they have too many cooks in the kitchen, but they don't manage their prospects very well either. It seems like they give up on guys, whether it's Nazem Kadri or if it's another player. But, the Toronto Maple Leafs right now have no excuse for how they develop some of their players. Luke Shen, again, a guy that, I think it's a pretty good defensive defenseman. He's not a number one or a number two defenseman. He's a decent number two pairing defenseman. And, they traded him to get James Van Riemsdyk, a trade that I like. But again, that was one of the guys that I would probably say is a good draft pick that they developed and they should have kept. But really, when it comes down to it, yeah, you should only have two, three guys really making the decisions, and then another three guys, you know, giving advice, Richie. But, you know, the World Junior Tournament, there are so many eyes, you know, whether or not you're an NHL guy or an AHL guy or a junior guy, everybody's watching this tournament, and your stock can increase so highly. I mean, Richie, we haven't even talked about Nathan MacKinnon. He's buried on the fourth line. People are going to say that, you know, and Seth Jones hasn't played that well either, by the way. They're going to say, oh, you know, are these guys that good? Well, I mean, the World Junior Tournament isn't going to make or break a guy's career, but the amount of eyes and right. the microscope that these guys are under is incredible.
Final question, guys. It seems like we're going to have a season. I'm optimistic about it. It seems like it'll be a 48-game season. Does a 48-game season end up discrediting the fact that it's only a 48-game season? Does that discredit the eventual Stanley Cup winner like New Jersey in 95?
No. Not at all. I mean, first off, nobody has a choice in that. I mean, that's the hand everyone's been dealt, right? So, I mean, the Devils' run in 95 was incredible. Remember, they swept the Red Wings, and Claude Lemieux had that amazing performance. Nobody expected the Devils to win that year, even if it was the trap era or whatever. But no, I mean, whoever wins the Stanley Cup, that still counts.
I'm with Ez. I don't think it discredits it at all. I think that the only thing they might want to do is what your friend or good friend at Hockey Legend suggested, make it a 50-game season so you could at least have a chance to have a 50-goal score in 50 games. Rocket Richard, opportunity.
Yeah, it's a good call.
Interesting point. One more segment left, and you know what that means. We're going to the line to talk to the host, Drew Mandel.
All the way in Kentucky.
All the way in Kentucky. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290. The last segment. Of course, you play Bruce Remus, so you're my good books, Dancing in the Dark. The last segment. The boss. Of 2012 for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Wow. I can't believe it's the end of the year.
I know, huh?
Yeah. How time flies.
And it could have been the end of the world.
That's true.
The Mayans were wrong.
Yeah, we're still here.
I went to Eddie's house. He had a bunch of bottled water and soup in the basement. Yeah,
bomb shelter.
Yeah, bomb shelter. That too. Joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg. You just heard him. You just heard David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com. I'm Richard Pollack, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, who's in Kentucky. We'll be speaking to him in a second. And Michael Remus, opping the show. Tim Debenham, the other side. We got a big operation here right now.
It's a four-man booth, a five-man crew.
Four-man booth. We're in the last segment of 2012. Remus, can we try and get Drew on the line here?
Sure, let me just phone him here. Hold on a sec. Got to punch in the numbers.
Oh, we're doing a live call.
Yeah, yeah, live call. Oh, it's busy.
What?
Why is Drew not answering the phone?
I told him we're calling now.
That cell phone has a busy signal.
That's weird. Hold on a second. Can you do me a favor?
Sure. What do you want me to
do? Can you call Fake Drew?
Fake Drew?
Oh.
I think I know Fake Drew's number here. Let me punch it in. Okay, hold on. All right, and we got a ring. Hold on one sec. Pick up Fake Drew. Oh, here he is.
Hello. Hello. Who is that?
Fake Drew, is that you?
Yeah, hello. Who is that?
Richard Pollack, filling in for you on the radio show.
Oh, fellas, how you doing? Listen, let's make this pretty quick. I got my reservation at Denny's in 20 minutes with the wife. Gonna get a couple grand slams. I'm gonna eat them both, but she'll be there, so let's make this quick.
You know, Fake Drew, we haven't asked you at all. You know, it's been two hours and 45 minutes. We haven't asked you at all what your thoughts are on the new NHL offer to the PA.
Rich, I think it's totally ridiculous. It's completely ridiculous. The politics of it are completely insane. You've got millionaires fighting billionaires over little. It's very tongue-in-cheek, very tongue-in-cheek. I tried to read the memorandum, the 300-page memorandum, but it spilled barbecue sauce on it halfway through. I couldn't finish it. But it's very tongue-in-cheek. In all my 52 years, I've never seen anything quite like this.
Fake Drew, is it true that you attended the Louisville Slugger Museum? We heard that you went to the Louisville Slugger Museum. How was that yesterday?
I'm sorry, I missed the question. I was eating a pastrami sandwich.
Oh, sorry.
The museum. The museum was fantastic. There's a great cafeteria there. They serve a terrific chicken parmesan and a great club sandwich. If you're into that sort of thing and you're in Kentucky, I highly recommend going there. Very tongue-in-cheek. Very tongue-in-cheek.
Fake IC Drew, people are very concerned. What have you been doing in Kentucky? Specifically, what were you doing today?
Kentucky's been good. The weather's been... I haven't been outside yet. I don't know what the weather's like. But, It's been very good. My wife, my Kentucky princess, you know, has her own little group of friends, so she, you know, that keeps her busy, which allows me to keep to my schedule. I take 2 naps a day. I take a cat nap in the morning, then a power nap in the afternoon, and then if I have time, I'll take a power cat. That's a combination of the two.
You know, Drew, we've been talking a little bit off the air, not on the air. We've been talking a little bit about, you know, what you've been doing there, and we were all kind of discussing how much Kentucky Fried Chicken have you eaten since you got to Kentucky?
That's a very good question. I've been to Kentucky Fried Chicken quite a bit, twice a day, 3 times last Sunday, but who's counting? And it's been very tongue-in-cheek. I've been trying to actually find the colonel to shake his hand. I owe him a great debt of gratitude. Very few men have meant more to me than the colonel himself. A little known fact, the colonel and I actually graduated high school together back in Kentucky County Prep School. So, you know, it would mean a lot to me to find him. He's meant a great deal to me. He's a very good man. We've come back a long way. Very kind of cheek.
Well, Fake Drew, we appreciate you making time for us today. We hope to speak to you in the new year, and if you ever want to give us a call, you know where to reach us.
Fellas, thanks for having me on. Rich, don't get too comfortable there. We all know whose show this is. Remus, same goes for you, Remus. As soon as I'm back, you're back behind the glass.
Okay, take care, Fake Drew.
Thanks, Fake Drew.
Thanks for calling in, or we called you.
Well, I mean, you know, there's no better way to wrap up 2012 than speaking to Fake Drew. Well,
Fake Drew is the highlight of the year. I mean, it's amazing that we waited until the end of 2012 to have the highlight of the season, but that was it.
Well, Dave, it's pretty clear that Fake Drew is 10 times better than real Drew.
Oh.
Well, he's funnier.
Yeah, exactly.
Has more to add.
Remus.
Handsomer.
That was about as good as it gets. Can we get some cheers and jeers ready to go here? I want to do an early one because we got to do our thank yous for 2012.
Cheers. Congratulations.
He's brilliant.
He's a good guy.
And jeers.
No, not good enough.
He's a bad boy.
I never seen something like this.
Surprisingly not good.
Remus, get your mic ready, too. We're going to include you here. For your 2012 cheer or jeer, this will be for the entire year. Yeah. It's the last show of 2012, Ezzy.
Yeah. Well, I'm gonna instead of just cheering one person, I'm gonna give my favorite moment of 2012. And it was the game, and we were watching this at a local restaurant. It was at the end of March. Winnipeg was on the road in Washington. They came back down from a 3-goal lead, and Timmy Stapleton scored in overtime. Everyone remembers that goal where Tim Stapleton shot, and then Buff got him the puck, and then he scored top corner. I'm going to give, you know, my cheer to that game, that moment, because the Jets were only 1 point out of the Eastern Conference playoff race at that time. And I'm going to give a cheer out to just hockey fans in general who have had to go through this. Just know that, you know, this lockout's going to be over. Hockey fans are the best fans in the world, Jets fans included. And, you know, just know that, you know, there's going to be NHL hockey back on the ice very soon.
Remus?
Dave, you go first.
That my cheer. Well, you know, I'm going to go with with what Ezzy said. I would love to cheer all the fans, especially the fans in Winnipeg. You know, we had the NHL back for the first time in 15 years. The fans embraced it as was expected. You know, they sold out the season tickets immediately. They embraced what became probably, you know, I know for Ezzy and I, our favorite thing, the GST chant. I mean, there was
absolutely
nothing more uplifting than seeing 15,000 people chanting GST, GST, knowing that you had a part in it. So it was quite special to be able to witness that and to see the fans really embrace that.
All right. It's really a tale of two hockey seasons. I mean, the first half, we saw the Kings take the Stanley Cup, so I'd like to give them a cheer. In the second half, we really had this disappointing and depressing lockout. And I'm going to cheer the NHL fans on Twitter. You know, on Twitter, everyone's been keeping track up-to-date CBA news. While there has been very little to be optimistic about, we had one really funny day when NHL Podium took over, and while it was probably the dumbest and most ridiculous thing ever, but the fact that the NHL Podium had someone created that Twitter account that was followed by many prominent media types and players shows that even in this difficult time, we can bring light to such an awful situation. So I'm going to cheer the fans for, you know, trying to bring some humor to the lockout.
I'm going to cheer and jeer. I don't want to be a Grinch here, but I'm going to jeer the way that Down and Fair, Gary Bettman, and really the people they're working for have handled this lockout. I think it's been disgraceful. I think they've wasted a lot of time. They waste a lot of money. They've cost a lot of businesses who rely on them and people whose livelihood depends on it, employees of the arenas and such. They've cost them a lot of time and money. and, you know, Christmas presents and things like that. I'm going to cheer, on the other hand, the actual fans, while they're being taken advantage of, clearly. They have been, they've shown a passionate, passionate love for the game, and it's and unconditional love, really, for the game of hockey, and it's been truly incredible to watch. Remus mentions on Twitter, we have the Jets fans here. I mean, how else... What sport would stick? What fans would stick by their sport like that? The other sports, you know, luckily didn't have to try, but hockey's again tested their fans, and unfortunately they're taking advantage of them. But fortunately for fans of, you know, fortunately for us, the fans of hockey are just so great. So that's where I'm going to leave it. It's been a heck of a 2012, guys. I know we've been grateful for the opportunity to be on the station, on the show. Grateful to be a part of, obviously, the Jets coverage, and looking forward to hopefully having the Jets back in 2013 to be part of the Jets coverage on an ongoing basis. Grateful for the help of Tim Debenham, Michael Remus.
Yeah, big thank you to producer Timmy and Remus, who do a great job on the show, and also Chris Brook, program director of this station, and Rack, and everybody else, Colin, and Alex, everybody that helps us out with this show. Then obviously Dave, from an Illegal Curve standpoint, who runs the website and then fills in on the radio show whenever Drew isn't here, or I'm not here, or you're not here. So thanks to everybody who makes the whole show revolve.
And thanks to our listeners.
Right.
Hey, yep. Number one, our listeners, people listen to the show. We're always caught off guard by actually people listening, right? So it's pretty amazing when people get reaction, when we get calls, when we get Twitter action.
Yep.
And when we get all those things, we're certainly grateful for it. We don't take it for granted at all, so I want people to know that. For our guests today, Robin Short of the St. John's Telegram and Shane Nady of TSN 1290 calling the games, the World Junior Games, over anew for Russia. For Tim Debenham, for Michael Remus, for David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, for Ezra Ginsberg, for Drew Mandel and fake Drew Mandel, I'm Richard Pollack. Have a great New Year's, and we'll be back here next week, Saturday, noon.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Join us again for serious hockey talk, Saturdays from noon to 3. The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, only on TSN 1290. Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets.